Maize and Colchester Parent Support Group are sponsoring this series of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. We offer support for families of children and young people with special educational needs in the Colchester area. To learn more and get in touch, please visit the Maize website, themaizegroup.co.uk.
In this episode, we hear from Roz Somerville, who's the Send Quadrant Manager for the North of Essex. And she talks to us about the support for schools, how they adapted their support through COVID, and how the new structure is starting to work in practice.
Roz, could you just start by telling us about your role within education?
Yes, so I'm Roz Somerville. I'm the SEND Quadrant Manager in the northeast of Essex, which means I have responsibility for the teams that work with children with SEND, special educational needs and disability, around the statutory processes, so anything relating to an education health and care plan. So that's taking through from the point of a request from schools or parents for an assessment through to the issuing of the plan and then the annual review of the plan. And any issues that might arise in terms of school placement and funding. So that's a SEND operations team. And then as well, there is the teams of educational psychologists and inclusion partners and engagement facilitators who go into schools and work with children, young people and the school setting and their families to look at how their needs are being met within schools. I also have a countywide role as the principal educational psychologist. So I have a professional responsibility there to ensure that educational psychologists across Essex are getting the right level of supervision they need and the right level of professional training. All educational psychologists have to be registered with the Healthcare Professions Council, and there are particular requirements of that. So I sort of have a role across the county to ensure that happens.
Thank you. Yeah, that sets a clear picture, and it will be obvious kind of why I'm asking some of the questions that I follow on to. So something that's come up quite recently from a lot of children and families as well is about kind of accountability. And if something's not working for a child in their school or for a family, how does the council kind of support that, or what is out there to support those children?
Well, we would, a lot of our service is delivered through schools and settings. So that's earlier setting schools and colleges. So we would hope that there would be a dialogue within the school, and we would be working with the special educational needs coordinator within the school to think about how we can work together with families and obviously improve things to children and young people. We can recognise, obviously, that sometimes that isn't always how we'd like it to be. We do have a educational psychology service parent carer helpline, which is also available for young people. So once a child reaches the end of year 11, and we would be able to receive calls from young people on that helpline as well. And that's available on a Monday afternoon during term time. I can make sure you've got the details that you could publish, Kieran, for parent carers and young people. And it's an opportunity to speak with an educational psychologist. That it is an anonymous call, so they don't take your name or details, but they will work with you to think about whatever it is you bring to the call, the young person might bring to the call, to work through that together, to think about how that young person might go forward in a positive way to bring about some change, and they might signpost them, they might help them think about it in a different way, they might work through the actions that they've already taken and think about what might be useful to do next.
Brilliant. And we just spoke kind of off camera as well about some of those younger children, and it might be more of a challenge sometimes. What would be some of your thoughts around how those type of children could be supported?
Well, I think that then comes back to the relationships they have in schools and obviously with their families and carers. So looking, encouraging them and supporting them to have those conversations with a trusted adult who could then represent them. And if that's their parent or carer, the parent or carer could then ring the helpline. And if it's a member of school staff, then they can be liaising with other members of the school staff, so the SENCO, and looking to bring about some change through those routes. And as I say, the special educational needs coordinator, the SENCO in a school, has direct access to those teams I spoke about. So the educational psychology service and the inclusion partner, the educational psychologist, every school has a link educational psychologist and a link inclusion partner. And we had a redesign in January that brought in the new role of inclusion partner and brought together that team around the school idea, where you've got a school effectiveness partner who works predominantly with the head to think about how they are running the school in a way that both achieves emotional well-being, you know, children have good experiences and they have good results. And educational psychologists and inclusion partners are focused around the application of psychology support and supporting the SENCO and school to implement the SEND code of practice. So together, every school has nominated school effectiveness partner, inclusion partner and educational psychologist, a link one. So they really are a team that the SENCO can go to when there are any issues in the school.
And that actually does lead on to what my next question was going to be about, was all about the new structure, which you've basically explained there. But I guess it is in the early stages of kind of working. How do you kind of feel it has been working, Ros, in this first kind of half term?
It's somewhat of a challenge. The obviously, we had our redesign in January, and by the end of that first term, we were in full lockdown. And so we haven't really been able to, it is just really this term that we've been really able to try and get it going in its full extent. Although, of course, actually what the lockdown did enable us to do was, because schools never shut, as you know, and we endeavoured to provide as much support as we could to schools during the closure period, and also enabled our teams to have some opportunities for training to make sure that they have the skills they need. And obviously this term, with the more children in schools, we have been trying to run the new services as we designed them, albeit maybe from a bit of a distance, because we haven't necessarily been overloading schools with physical visits when that wasn't necessary. So one of the things, one of the mainstays of the new redesign is around that team that I talked about, and actually how we work with schools and settings and colleges in a collaborative way to avoid duplication and ensure that the school has the support from the right person at the time. So there's something called a strategic planning meeting that occurs on an annual basis with the head teacher, the special needs coordinator, and anyone else that the school think would be useful, along with those, that team that I mentioned before, the school effectiveness partner, the inclusion partner, and the educational psychologist. The team I haven't really spoken very much about who are new as a consequence of the redesign are the engagement facilitators. And they link back really to an earlier question you asked around support for families. And I sort of started to say that obviously we would hope that schools and families, and we know huge amounts of work goes on, you know, ensuring that they're trying to work together to bring about good outcomes to young people with SEND, and obviously for families, for their children. We have got this new role and new team of engagement facilitators to support that. And that can be both at a whole school or setting level, whereby the engagement facilitator might work with school staff to think about how do they have really useful and meaningful engagement with our families. So that might just be a generic sort of input. And they might get involved where that is proving more difficult, either from the family's perspective or the school's perspective. So the engagement facilitator is part of our new redesign, new services. And we are learning, I think, as we go and with the challenges we face about how to access those services and how to deploy them in a way that brings about the most amount of change, really. And I think that's probably true for all. The role of inclusion partner is predominantly to really focus and work with schools to look at the assess, plan, do review cycle for children and young people. So actually, are we really getting, you know, are we really identifying what the child's needs are? They've got SEND. Are we clear about what that is? And then are we planning well using the whatever resource is available, often limited resource that is available, as effectively as possible using evidence-based interventions? And then are we reviewing those to check that we did what we thought we were going to do and that it made the difference that we hoped? And if it didn't, what can we do differently next time that might help? There's a real focus on that for our inclusion partners. And again, that might be at an individual child level, or it might be working with staff generally about the systems they've got in a school to do that and helping them understand all those points. And it links all to the One Planning, of course, and we've got our One Planning guide online and the wheel. So there are multiple other elements that you need to consider around preparing for adulthood, motivation, aspiration, what's the support system that child has available to them, what their strengths.
No, thank you. That helps really try and paint a picture of the structure and how it's working in practice as well, which I think a lot of parents will be interested in hearing about. You obviously mentioned there about the challenges, and that's what I wanted to come on to next. It has obviously been a difficult time for just everybody in and out of education. So with kind of COVID, what has been the local response in regards to, especially children with SEND? How have you been working with schools to ensure those children don't fall through the gaps? Because unfortunately, when there are times of struggle, it can be the children that are of need that do fall through the gap. So how have you been able to work with schools?
Well, we have the inclusion partner and the educational psychologist linked to every school, and that they were in contact with their schools and available to them during the lockdown. We obviously had reasonable endeavours during lockdown, which was around children with education health and care plans and ensuring that they had as much support as possible for exactly the reason, obviously, of children with education health and care plans are by definition those with the highest level of need, a group with very high level needs. So we worked through what the DfE required us to do, which was working with schools to look at each child individually and ask schools to have those conversations, which we knew they already were because of the dialogue we'd already had with them, that they were doing welfare checks and checking in on children and young people very regularly. We asked for that conversation to move around keeping that welfare element, obviously, but then also checking around the provision that set out in the education health and care plan. And some of that wasn't possible during the first lockdown. So thinking about, well, what else might be some help towards that if the exact provision isn't available, what's reasonable and possible under the circumstances? And that really changed very much for different families, but depending on the family's individual circumstance, as well as what the school was able to do at that time. And the local authority liaised with the schools to ensure that where the schools, if it was a barrier the schools experiences, was there anything we could do as a local authority to support the school to remove that barrier? And we worked really closely with schools around that. We had all of our teams phoning schools. We have children, obviously, who have an Essex Educational Health and Care Plan but go to school outside of Essex schools, so go to school in other local authorities. So we were contacting schools outside. We have some children and people who attend schools and are residential. However, because of the shutdown, they had to come back into Essex, so they weren't physically in school. And our teams were calling their families on a weekly basis to check in to see how things were going and what provision and what the local authority could do to support. And primarily to support that family at that moment, and also to ensure that as much education as we could was reasonable and appropriate was available.
That's the thing as well. Without knowing everything that goes into it on the inside, it's quite hard, isn't it, to really understand the processes. So that, again, that makes it really clear. I just wanted to finish with a key question. And the reason I'm sitting in front of you today, Roz, is about the multi-schools. So from your perspective, I know that you have been present when I've presented about it before, and you've asked questions and kind of been very positive about the multi-schools. Why do you think it's important that children have their voices heard, and how is that going to continue with everything that's being developed at ECC?
Well, I obviously, as the principal educational psychologist, I would always really important to listen to the voice of the young person and the child. Everything we do is trying to improve things for them. Schools and settings should be about children and young people. And we need to listen to what they've got to say about what we're doing. We're all very well intentioned. We mean well. We get up every day to try and make a difference. We don't ask the people we're trying to make a difference for whether it's working or not, you know. So I think it's fundamentally important and really important for us to often review that espouse theory and practice. So what we say we're doing, and then whether that's actually what we are doing, and then whether or not what we are doing is actually making the difference we hoped it would. And the only people who can tell us that are children and young people.
Yeah, absolutely. No, 100%. That makes it really clear, Roz. And I hope that we can continue to develop that and work with schools and the new structure to really embed what we're doing.
Well, I hope so too. And I think it's really important that we do it in a meaningful way, not in a way that just ticks the box to say, oh, we ask children and we ask young people, but actually, is it really getting to the root of what they think and what they feel, and that they're having an influence on what we do next? And I think that's, I talked about the assess, plan, do, review cycle and working with school staff doing that. But that part of that is about ensuring school staff are engaging with the children, young people in that process as well. So that they are involved in their own assess, plan, do, review for their individual needs.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Roz. I really appreciate it. And I know a lot of parents and children as well will be really interested in everything that you've said. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Maze and Cultures to Parents support group are sponsoring this series of the Multi-Schools Lowdown. We offer support for families of children and young people with special educational needs in the Colchester area. To learn more and get in touch, please visit the Maze website, themazegroup.co.uk.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start today.